Welcome to this episode of Wild Pals Tales from the Superyacht Laundry. Today I am doing an interview, but it's kind of a bit weird because you're like an old friend. Well, we're not old, but like you're a friend. We've known a very, very long time. The gorgeous, the fabulous Rhea, how are you doing?
Good, thank you. I am old, so I will own that.
I didn't really think about that, did I, before I opened my mouth. We have known each other, I don't know, quite a time now, haven't we? We have always, actually, we can go all the way back to, it was Catalina Heights, wasn't it? Catalina Nights. Didn't you do,
yep.
You, so this is like.
That was back in 2014.
Yes, that was when I met my that was the time when I had met Tim and we dressed up as wenches and knights and we went round Palma getting drunk. That was an interesting night, for sure. Got some really interesting
photos. I had many of them. They were great fun.
We've known each other quite some time now in various different things, but obviously in the most recent with you working or owning, founding, creating Yachting International Radio. But before we talk about that, let's go back into the mists of time. What was Rhea doing in Canada? And then how did she end up in Mallorca? And then, you know, to fill in the blanks, like, where did you come from?
Well, I grew up in a logging yard in northern British Columbia, Canada. And we spent a lot of time in remote logging camps. And literally I was in a logging yard. Right across from my house was the big hangar size shop where they used to fix the logging trucks and the backhoes and the cats. And there was a lot of equipment around. I think at one point my father owned 15 logging trucks.
Absolutely, so I grew stunning up as well. Like, you know, I remember when I traveled Canada, one of the jobs you could do is go plant trees in the woods. Like it looked really hard though. And I was a bit.
You know what I mean? One thing I can say about British Columbia is that pretty much any job that you have is hard graft. I mean, the Canadians are known as a tougher people simply because in order to survive, you just have to be tougher.
It's a wild, wild, wild country, you know.
Yeah.
It's not very forgiving. The winters aren't very forgiving.
No, I hate winter, so not looking forward to going back.
So you grew up in BC. Were you always destined to work in media, obviously? Were you just desperate to communicate with anybody who wasn't in a logging yard?
Well, no, basically, I sort of grew up in a really religious household. And my father was sort of the school of thought that women were to be seen and not heard, as well as children were to be seen and not heard. I was expected to marry well and to have 2.5 kids, live in suburbia and cook dinner for my husband every night. And unfortunately, I'm really shit at cooking. And
the scene of not heard bit obviously probably was a struggle for you as well.
Sorry?
I said the scene of not heard bit was probably a struggle from the start.
Well, I remember even as a little kid, like, and I got smacked for it because it was still in the days of corporal punishment, right? Like, I mean, if it was today's day and age, I'm sure CPS or whatever would be at my parents' door. but if people were ignoring me, I'd be, you know, four years old and there'd be like a room full of adults because my parents were very social people. And if somebody ignored me, I'd literally stomp on their foot to get their attention. So yeah, keeping me quiet was a bit difficult. And my father forever struggled with that. For sure. And I think that was sort of the basis of what led me to media, because I felt that I had something to say and I was smarter than my brother, which wasn't hard to do, honestly. But my father was always grooming him to take over the logging company. And ironically enough, most of the men in the logging company assumed that I would take over because I had the balls and my brother didn't. But when it came down to it, I was still expected to be barefoot and pregnant and looking after my husband at some stage. So I think that's really when I made the decision to go into media, because my voice had been ignored. Even some of the best advice that I'd ever given my father was ignored. And I thought, no, there's so many people out there whose voices are being ignored that really do have something to say that should be heard. And no one's giving them the opportunity. What a better world this would be if all of these people went out there and had their voices heard. And so that's sort of what led me towards media, I guess.
It is quite crazy if you think about, you know, I'm a firm believer in fate. You know, even when you go back to your childhood, you can kind of see the pattern of where you ended up, you know, where your character was taking you, your environment was taking you. So what happened? So you went to school, did media, or did you end up pregnant? Or both?
I left home at 15 and I finished school while working full time to support myself. And then I went on to college and I got my business administration. And while I was doing business administration, I started working at a newspaper locally. And the newspaper job was what sort of, they were affiliated with the radio station. And that's where that connection sort of came. I liked working at the newspaper, but I really loved the idea of radio. And so I ended up working at the newspaper for, I don't know how many years, but by the time I was 23, I was working at radio in Terrace, BC. And then I moved to Penticton, BC, and I was working at radio at that stage.
What was the attraction to radio from it? Obviously it's the written word, but it was what do you think it was about radio that kind of resonated with you more?
Well, in that day and age, it was before social media and before the internet even. And I think what really drew it to me was that you could actually reach people. It was a way of reaching people. With newspaper, you know, they would have to sit down and read it, but so many more people would, you know, the days of you know, the portable radio and whatever else, and people would listen to it in the cars, and you could, you know, impart the news on the morning drive to school, or, you know, at noon, or the afternoon drive time, evening drive time. It was a method of delivering something, honestly. You know, with newspaper, you could go through and edit again and again and again. And at that time, radio was live and there was no editing. You know, you said your piece and you answered questions and there was no going back and fixing it. So you knew that what you were hearing over the radio was, whether it be somebody's opinion, somebody's delusion, or news, you knew that it was what was happening at that time. And what came out of that person's mouth was what came out of that person's mouth.
I think, like, I've not really thought about it before, but like the you know, obviously that when radio came about, that instant change, you know, that instant way to kind of access a lot of people live, you know, obviously that was before TV obviously came afterwards. But from a news perspective, obviously that was quite, you know, that we haven't seen a bigger change until obviously the internet and Twitter and Telegram. Do you know what I mean? That's, we're now going through the second probably phase of that instant reaction, instant news, which is all changed.
Radio was the first time, I think, that anybody could actually reach into your home and become part of it.
Yeah.
You know, people would sit around their, you know, their radio every night, for whole families, to listen to shows. I mean, wasn't it Orson Welles that had that big, you know, he had everybody in England believing that the sky was falling, right? Mm-hmm. And then we, of course, had pirate radio. You know, so many amazing points in history were created through radio. And it was the first time that people on one side of the country could hear about what was happening on the other side of the country. Or it was the first time that a leader of the country could advise people on, you know, a lot of the time through radio, it was during wartime, too.
Yes.
So it was a way of communication that nobody had ever had before. And there's just something really important and historic, I think, about what radio means to the world and as a form of communication prior to any other forms of modern communication. And it still exists today, not in such a great capacity, but I think there's still room for it.
100%, I think there's still room for it. Because obviously when TV came along, I'm sure there was obviously scaremongering, that obviously that's the death of radio and stuff like that. It's always, I don't think it's going away. It's just, again, another tool, another medium, you know, that is quite bespoke. It kind of fits in with your life. And ultimately, radio stations are now digital anyway. So it's the same thing. You know, you don't have the same kind of radio. You can have radio on your phone. And I think if it had to still be a physical radio, I think it would have struggled. But with technology now, the radio stations, you know, they come with you wherever. And people still like that, that of the moment, you know, conversation, that live, you know, that live feed. I mean, for me, it's always driving in the car, like dropping my kid off there, back again. That's when the radio is always on, whether it's music, news or debate. But the world is big enough to have it as well, which I think is fantastic. Also,
I think it's more focused towards, like we talk about, and I joke about it all the time, video killed the radio star back in the 80s. Yeah. To a certain extent, that's true because we, you know, that was when much music came online. Yeah. And all of a sudden it was the music videos, right? And that was sort of what drew away from radio, because the only way to listen to music prior that you didn't have to pay for was through radio. And then, of course, television came on and brought that. So it ended the necessity to play music all the time, but talk radio never died. No. You know, that was the aspect of it that continued on. And to this day, and you know what Yachting International Radio does is basically talk radio. It's just we pre-record or go live. It depends, but we are talk radio. And I will get back to the radio portion of things again once I'm back in Canada.
Well, yes. But before you go back to Canada, when on earth did you leave? And, you know, how did the yachting, because, you know, you're working in logging and you work in radio. Where the hell did yachts come from?
Well, I did a trip. I was working radio in Penticton and I booked a month trip through Europe. And it was the first time that I'd been overseas. I mean, I'd been to the States and, you know, like everybody in Canada, but it's the first time that I've been to Europe. And I started off in England and it was too cold and miserable. And then I started the trip through Europe. We took the ferry over to mainland France and then drove through France into Spain and along, you know, into Monaco and all those beautiful places in between. And I really fell in love with the Mediterranean Sea. And at that time, I said to myself, that's it. In 2 years, I'm going to be living in Europe. And not knowing that, it, you know, in my head, that was sort of, and this just goes to show just how stubbornly stupid I am sometimes. But literally, I went back and I owned a house. I owned a business. I had two cars. I mean, I was well established, but it literally was a year almost to the day that I came back from that vacation that I sold my business, sold my cars, sold my house, gave away most of my furniture, and was on my way to Europe.
Wow. What was it about, you know, where in Europe did you go that rocked your world that much?
It was the Mediterranean Sea. It was the beauty of Europe as a whole. I mean, you know, in Italy, the small little towns and the peaceful and the architecture, the diet, the weather. It was just a different environment because in Canada, we kind of live to survive, right? You go from season, every season has a defined sort of term to it. And you go from season to season and you're just living for the end of that season. There's not really a large sort of cultural aspect to Canada. We are a blended nation of many different nationalities. But there's not that history there.
Yep.
And I think what really amazed me about Europe was, you know, modern day people living in villages that were thousands of years old that have maintained the traditions of those villages that were thousands of years old. And I wanted to experience that. I wanted to experience the food, the life, the wine, the just everything about it, the smells, the culture.
Yeah. No, I can understand that. You know, don't get me wrong, the nature and the scenery in Canada is, you know, breathtaking. You know, it is one of the most gorgeous places on the planet. But I suppose in a way there's no more to it than that. It is immense beauty and everything else. If you're looking for, especially if you're into people, culturally rich definitely is what Europe is, and everything's so close together. You know, you guys in Canada will drive to go shopping for like 8 hours. Like, I lived in Calgary and people were going to Edmonton for shopping, and I'm like, how long does it take to drive there? And you're just gonna go to the shop? I'm like, I don't understand.
Well, I mean, it's to say, when I was living in the Okanagan Valley, and mind you, you know, something that a lot of people don't understand about Canada is that we are the second largest landmass in the world, and we have very diverse climates. Where I'm moving to is actually like the Hawaii or the Majorca of Canada. We have white sand beaches that go on for miles. We have, we've got scorpions, we've got black widow spiders. Not that that's any like lure. But it is desert country. We grow wine. It's where ice wine came from. It's a beautiful, beautiful area. I think, though, too, that it's like anything. If you're a curious sort of person, where you grew up, you're so used to it, you don't actually see the beauty of it.
No.
So you have to leave in order to appreciate the beauty of what you had. And that's what I've done.
So you're in Europe, what, you're just cruising around vineyards or like eating lots of pasta? What
no, well, actually I met someone and then I got knocked up and they lived in Europe. So so I moved to Ibiza.
What? You lived in Ibiza?
Yeah, I lived in Ibiza for a year.
Wow. Got it to be in Ibiza and pregnant though. That sucks. Obviously, you keep you under control, maybe, Rio.
I've never been. Okay, that's a lie. Yeah, it's okay. See, I'm that old. I forget when I used to party. But yeah, no, thinking back, I did used to be a bit of a party animal. So
you're in Ibiza, though. It'd be criminal not to. Well, you'd have to have, like, the discernment of a goddamn nun to not enjoy yourself on that island. That's why I avoided it when in my 20s. There's a whole bunch of my friends that were going. And me and my best friend, we were like, we can't go. We can't, because we won't come back. We were literally, we knew what we were like at the time. We're like, if we go, we'll end up trying to get jobs and we would just stay. And then I would be one of those leathery women that still lives in Ibiza now, talking about crazy parties that I went to.
I think the thing for me, though, is in Canada, because I grew up in small towns, I'm not big on crowds, right? And I did go to a couple of clubs in Ibiza and I didn't like it. And it's simply because I don't like being packed into any place like a sardine. And it was just loud, overwhelming. I'm used to bush parties. You know, I'm used to going out. We had this place back home called Frank's Field. And it was in the middle of nowhere. And you would drive in for a good 3 minutes or so. It was a gravel pit. And we literally, you know, they would have trucks with all the DJ equipment and wow, lights. And we'd big, huge bonfire in the middle of the gravel pit. And everybody would meet down there. I mean, we'd have about 50 people maybe. And that would be our party, right? So when I went to Ibiza and I experienced that for the first time, it was just, it was overwhelming for me. I mean, it's still at heart, even though I've traveled around the world, I'm still a country girl. I'm still a small town girl. And that kind of thing doesn't appeal to me. I'd rather have more one-on-one or smaller, more intimate gatherings than the craziness that goes on in Ibiza.
So when did you hop over to Mallorca? Like, when was that transition?
Well, after about a year of being in Ibiza and Ibiza town flooding, as it did every year, according to the locals, I decided, and I had a 10-year-old daughter with me because I moved with my 10-year-old daughter and I was pregnant. And so I just thought, no, we've got to go where it's more family friendly. They only had one English school on the island at the time as well. And there was paparazzi in the parking lot every time you took your kid to school. And it just wasn't. You know, and these kids were exposed to, like, here's my 10-year-old daughter coming from Canada. And Canadian kids are really innocent, right? I mean, they're just really innocent. And if you're thinking kids aren't, trust me, not in the slightest. So, you know, these were kids of, like, famous DJs and stuff, right? So their parents were out partying until 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning, dropping them off school, higher than a kite, still pissed, going to the local bar, getting more pissed, doing more cocaine, and then picking them up after school. And that was the kind of life that they were leading. Like, these kids were having sex at 11 and doing drugs. And I was like, this is not, no, I like my innocent little 10-year-old Canadian kid. So we came to Mallorca, I think, Easter that year. And I really fell in love with Mallorca because it was still that sort of small island appeal, small town appeal. But there were so many more options. And so, yeah, found a house in the middle of the island and moved into a tiny little Mallorcan village.
Nice.
Just after that.
It is a special place. I've said it many, many times. The island is, it's just got a really nice vibe about it. I mean, I know they don't want us to be there anymore. Like, we got constantly, our press is like, they've had enough. But that's more about it, like everywhere, you know, the commercial properties, you know, people doing Airbnbs and stuff like that. You know, it really does. The first time I ever knew that that was a thing was actually when I was on board in Barcelona, and Barceloneta had a lot of protests because obviously they did up all the marina, so it looks lovely and it's really close to the beach. But obviously there's a community of people that have lived there all their lives. Their kids have grown up there and they've all been there, you know, when it was fishing predominantly, you know, and they're literally being priced out of the market. So they were kicking off about it. And obviously recently Mallorca's doing the same, I guess. They're, you know, the local.
Look, I completely understand them because, you know, there's families that have been here for generation upon generation upon generation, and they're losing their culture because of corporations and their language. And I think it's a travesty. I mean, what makes Mallorca so beautiful, not that many of the Brits or Germans that come here ever realize it, but what makes Mallorca beautiful is that rich cultural history. I mean, you know, Mallorca is situated the mouth of the Mediterranean Sea. It has been taken over by many different cultures over the years because it was a strategic point of, you know, for any armed forces, right? Yeah. In any war, this was a very strategic place. And you see bits of that history all over the island. And to be inundated with a bunch of people that just want to get drunk and leave their trash on the beach and drive up house prices so that they can no longer live here. Yeah, you know, I see where they're getting pissed.
Yeah, it's all over, isn't it? You know, obviously, again, it's changing people's habits. So you fell in love with the island. You've got two kids. So what was your idea when you got to, you know, Mallorca? Were you going to work in media or try to get into media and go back to it? Or were you
just... Well, no, because I got pregnant again.
You are on it, literally.
I know, right? So I had my third child, and he was really ill. He was born 2 months premature. He had two holes in his heart. So I spent 5 years really sort of in and out of the hospitals on a continuous basis. He took 14 different kinds of medication every day, and it was every 2 hours. So a lot of time of not sleeping. And when he was five, he had open heart surgery. And that fixed the holes in his heart. And our lives really sort of changed after that. So I did have the freedom to, you know, sort of reimagine what I was going to be and where I was going to go. And so I started working for a local radio station here, which was German owned. And Germans do things differently than Canadians. I think Germans do things differently than the world, really. It was weird. Lovely people, don't get me wrong, but definitely just not the way that I was used to anything. And then I started helping Lars Molin with his Facebook groups in yachting. And of course, being English speaking, the minute you move to Mallorca, the only people you're going to meet are in yachting, right? So that was sort of my first opening. You know, those were the people that I met. And so I started helping Lars with his Facebook pages.
Mm.
And then I started doing some social media marketing for different companies that I knew, different yachting companies that I knew. And then I started working for the first radio station that started in the yachting space. And then I quit after a year and a half. I quit after a year and started up Yachting International Radio.
What was the drive to start your own?
Well, I realized that I'd been, you know, since the age of 22 or so, I'd been in radio myself. And I saw that it could work in this space, but it had to be done by somebody who understood radio, not somebody who thought if we build it, they will come and we'll become instant millionaires, because that's not the way any business works. You got to put in the time and the effort, and you got to know what you're doing. You have to have some education in what it is that you're doing. If you have to hire, you know, none of us are perfect at everything. Even in my business today, I have to hire things out because there's certain things I'm good at and certain things I'm not. And I'm smart enough to understand what I'm good at. And unfortunately, for them, everything had to be hired out because they didn't know anything about the business. They knew yachting, but nothing about the business. And I always say, if you're in media, you can apply your skills to any business on the face of the planet. Any business. But as long as it's in radio, right? It's like, yeah. You know, a captain, he's not going to come on land and decide he's going to be a media mogul. It's likewise. I mean, you know, you can't do that. You know, and a captain, he can captain any boat, depending on what his ticket says. You know, he's got the experience. And he can do it in any form of maritime. But that was sort of, yeah, I just thought, well, I love what I do. I've always loved radio. I've always loved the spoken word. So let's just set it up on your own.
It's quite amazing when you think about it. And especially in this day and age, you get it a lot with marketing, like individuals, you know, thinking that they, especially social media marketing, they assume that they can do it just because you're on, slightly because you use Instagram, you now understand what marketing is. You know, there is still a reason why people do marketing degrees, because there is a science behind it, you know, and it's like anything, you know, like I completely agree with what you say about it. You know, you could know the yachting industry, but there is skill in producing a radio show. It's not, you know, there is other things that you need to consider. And if you don't understand that, it's not going to be effective. And I think,
well, I mean, it's even down to choosing a voice. You know, I think a lot of people don't understand that just because you want to do it doesn't mean you're going to make your podcast fake. You've got to have the right voice. It can't be a squeaky, you know, you may be cute as hell, but once you put that into podcast format, no one's going to see what you look like. All they're going to hear is that annoying, really, really annoying Minnie Mouse voice. And they're going to want to chuck their phone out the window, right? Like, I'm sorry, sweetheart. There's nothing you could do about your voice. Unless, of course, you know, you take your entire script and make it an AI voice, which is possible nowadays. But it doesn't have the same cadence. It's not as honest and as real. And I think we've gotten to a stage now with AI that people want honest and real. They've seen enough AI, they've heard enough AI, and they want reality. They want to know what other people are thinking, what other people are doing, and how other people, you know, are doing what they do.
So let's go back to the beginning of, you know, obviously you want to do your own radio station. You've decided to do it. What was your mission? What did you, you know, Yachting International Radio, you wanted to use it to do what?
Well, I built Yachting International Radio on four pillars, because anything that you build has to have a very strong foundation, and the strongest foundations are built on four pillars. And that was diversity, equality, mental health, and sustainability. Four things, because I have three children and now two grandchildren. At that time, I just had the three children. But I really wanted to build something that would spread that message sort of as wide as possible to make change. And that's why I built it, because I felt that in modern media today, everything is leaning a certain way. I mean, if you listen to one media source, it's going to be right leaning, or you're going to listen to another media source, it's going to be left leaning, or, you know, these huge corporations that have so much money that they can afford to make an entire segment of a population believe in one thing, because they've got that kind of money to do that, and because they're pushing what their political beliefs are. And I firmly come from the idea of, way before all of this, you know, because the radio station that I worked at was independently owned, because there still were a few left at that time, you know, half a century ago.
not that long.
Not that long. 35 years, so almost. But I wanted to bring back the type of reporting that was just honest, straightforward. You know, I have some of the hosts that come on board Yachting International Radio that I can't even listen to some of their stuff. Honestly, because I'm like, oh, shut up. Like, it just, the way they think, I don't get. But it's not my right to tell them that they can't be there. They do have a message, and it's an important message. And ultimately, I need to sit back and say, okay, you know, are they being abusive? You know, the things that you really have to be careful about, are they lying, first off? You know, is what they're spreading out there, is it hate? Is it, you know, about abusing people? Is it hurting people? Is it lying? And if that's not the case, then everybody has a right to have a voice. And each one of them brings something special to the table. And so you have to support that. If you want to be bipartisan in media, then you can't shut down people just for having their own opinion.
Also, if you are a true journalist, you have to give both sides, you know, and that's, I mean, if in the UK, we've come across this recently, you know, and, you know, and a lot of the, I think a lot of the populist stuff that's going on in the world and, you know, the push to the right in a certain countries, which aren't necessarily completely right wing, but if media silences the right of the conversation, then they get more desperate. And then if you've shut down the debate, there's no way for them to kind of thrash it out and work out who's got the better idea of whatever. You can't just shut down one side because it doesn't feel real. It doesn't legitimize the left side of things either, because you've got, you know, you're canceling the argument. I think a lot of problems with the societies all over at the moment is because for some reason, some media is scared to actually just be honest and open about both sides of the argument. You know, they are really paranoid about opening it up and giving a voice to certain individuals. You might, like you said, you might not agree with on 99% of the stuff, but that doesn't mean they shouldn't have a right to actually say what they're saying. And they're definitely...
Well, and I think bringing it back to the mainstream and the fact that there's no room for hate in media. I'm sorry, there isn't. And that's all we see. You know, I work on social media every single day because of this, my business. And I mean, since the pandemic, the amount of hate that is coming in my face, like consistently, it's almost like a dam burst. And it's just constant hate. And that isn't good for anybody's mental health, mine alone. I mean, people talking about racism and being blatantly racist, blatantly sexist, blatantly, you know, no one's afraid to hide the ugly side of their nature anymore. And I put that blame squarely on the feet of media today.
Yeah, I think, you know, it is crazy what's going on. So to create something, you know, to create a platform and then stay true to it, I think is probably the hardest thing. And obviously, yeah, working in the yachting sphere, has it been difficult, you know, not to kind of sell out and just do the glossy stuff and ignore certain stories, you know, in the time that you've created it?
It's not in my nature. I've never taken the easy path. I've always taken the road less traveled. And I've always probably made it more difficult for myself than I really should have. But from day one, I have set up, I'm very principled. I set up Yachting International Radio for a reason. And I don't think there, you know, maybe there was a time where I couldn't pay my rent at one stage where I thought, what am I doing? You know, am I crazy? But then I looked around and I thought, oh my God, it's like the Bobbsey twins everywhere. I mean, there wasn't a form of media that didn't literally almost a carbon copy of each other. And I thought, no, I've got to continue this because I set out with a mission, something that, you know, was in my head when I was a kid, something that I always believed in. And, you know, you stay true to yourself, you stay true to your ethics, and eventually, you know, the cream rises to the top.
Yeah, well, slowly. slowly. So when you started, what was, you know, Yachting International, what was the format of it? And then where are we today? Because it has shifted, obviously, rightly so, because lots of things have shifted in introducing new media. But like in the beginning, how did it work?
In the beginning, I didn't even know how to use Instagram. I wasn't on Twitter. I wasn't on Instagram. I'd never been on Instagram. And I started it off as radio, as online radio. And I quickly realized after, you know, it's got to be live radio. Like, you can't have a radio station without having 24-hour live DJs. And I was only one person. And so I think probably about a month or two in, I realized that what I needed to do was start putting everything out video and on social media. And I just started curating hosts. You know, I think one of the first people that I found was Corinne Rayson from The Crew Coach. And because I, you know, she was licensed. And that's another thing for me is that, you know, anything that comes on my platforms, if they're going to be hosted and they've got a certain topic, they've got to have qualifications to be there. Because I don't want just anybody talking about mental health. You know, it's like the same on land. If you're going to go down to the local, you and I, we're not going to go down to the local corner store and ask the corner store shop guy to help us with our mental health. Right? Like, I mean, it's the same. I don't care what industry you're in, if you're at sea, if you're on land. So Corinne Rayson was the first person that came on board, and she was licensed. And so it just sort of evolved from there. And I think now I've got, well, within the next week, I'll have 23 hosts. But I realized that I needed to take it from just radio and take it over to social media. So that's when I started signing up to the Twitters and to Instagram and started up my YouTube channel and started pushing it out across all the different platforms because I had to reach everybody.
Well, social media is different to news as well, isn't it?
Yes.
Like that's an education in itself. You know, like what goes on social media isn't news.
No, social media is really opinions, but, you know, the way I see it is that we aren't in a world where people are going to come to you. You've got to go to where they are. And when you look at demographics, there are specific demographics for every single one of the social media users. You know, the Instagram people aren't on YouTube. The LinkedIn people aren't on Instagram. Facebook and LinkedIn, possibly. But, you know, everybody has their favorite form of social media. They may browse the others occasionally, but they really do stick to the one. And podcast is podcast. I mean, you know, as long as you, and even on podcast, you have to make sure that your podcast provider is distributing that to everybody's favorite podcast app. Because there are, you know, at least 20 that I know of. There's Spotify, there's Apple Podcasts, there's, you know, Hulu, there's, you know, there's a whole, so you've got to make sure that you go to the people. You can't expect them to come to you. Mm-hmm. So I think that was one of the biggest growth periods for me was understanding that, you know, not only did I have to do the work of one person, but I had to do the work of a team. Essentially.
And raise 3 children at the same time.
Yes. Well, by that point, actually, my oldest had moved out. She was already in her 20s, so.
A little bit of leeway then. Not much, but a little bit. So how it started out is not how it is now. What do you think the main, obviously myself, I've created a podcast because of Pearls of Wisdom. What do you think podcasts bring now that the other, you know, obviously you take live radio, social media and all of that kind of stuff. What do podcasts bring that the others don't and why there's now, you know, a deluge of different podcasts happening?
Well, I mean, 2 years ago, they were saying all the research that you would do was saying podcasts were the you know, fastest growing form of marketing in the world. And, you know, thankfully, I was smart enough to start it up, what I started up in 2019. I'm not sure it was smart enough or it was just dumb luck, but let's go with smart enough. It makes me sound better. I think because we are seeing a world that is getting busier and busier, more people are hustling more and more and more. There's just, it's almost like people are reaching out for more stimulation all the time. And podcasts offer that. And they offer it no matter where you are. Whether you be in your car, you can be listening to a podcast while you drive. Whether you be doing your morning run, you can be listening to a podcast while you run. Whether you're doing your workout, the same thing. If you're on a plane, if you're on a bus, if you're on a train, all of these things, you can be listening to podcasts. It's not so easy on a run to be watching a video, right? Obviously. You can't be watching a video while you're driving, obviously. So I think that's why it's been more a matter of convenience. People still want all that information and they want the knowledge, but it's how you deliver that information and knowledge to them that has changed. And statistics show it's going to continue to blow up for years to come.
I think it is, for me, like obviously creating this podcast, it was never first of all, it wasn't my idea. But what I think the benefit, obviously, with all the different things that we've wanted to cover, it does create a different kind of space. Having a conversation about a topic is very different to, creating marketing, educational material and everything else. It creates an opportunity for another level of understanding about that topic or behavior or whatever, which is very unique. And it's not really surprising that it has blown up. But when it comes to yachting podcasts, do you see it having a positive influence on the industry?
I think so, because the conversations that are being had are probably the first time those conversations have ever been had. You see a lot of these glossy magazines out there. They really want to be... It's like, I don't know, you can put lipstick on a pig, but it's still a pig, right? But you see these people, a lot of these yachting publications have become basically the equivalent of the used car sales guides that we saw back in the 1980s. It's like glossy pictures of yachts, one after the other, advertisements, and then a really well-edited story. And so now we're seeing that backlash with sites like Yachty's Name, Shame, and Fame, and, people suing people and people being found out for being, predators in the industry. It's because nobody talked about this stuff. And I think finally, those topics are being raised, but it's only because, people like you, people like Marion from Yachts Mermaids were able to start talking about it, open the conversation, Corrine talking about mental health. I think that it really has created the change that we see today, because those glossy magazines, only in the past few years, now they're starting to talk about it because they're not afraid of losing their clients as a result, because they've seen it's been accepted.
Well, the thing is with it, you see, like I got a friend of mine who's a writer, and it's really tough for professional writers in general at the moment. But podcasts, liability and stuff like that, I think the legal system hasn't really caught up. So where magazines are super cautious about what they publish, because obviously the law is very clear, and especially there are clear lines to sue for defamation and stuff like that, I think social media and especially podcasts, because they're brand new, I don't necessarily think that people are as cautious when talking about certain things as well.
Actually, the law applies. I'm not sure about England, but in Canada, if you're a journalist, the law applies no matter what form of journalism you take. So it could be podcasts, it could be written, it could be TV. The fact is, there is a law that applies to that. And you can be sued. I mean, people are being sued for financial advice, for example, in the UK and the US, while not being qualified to give that financial advice. And there's been some class action lawsuits as a result. So, the laws are there. They're in place. I think the issue is that not a lot of people realize that those laws do apply to their podcast. And likewise, the people that feel that they have a case for libel, they're not aware that they can actually go to court and sue for
It's also the funding. Most of the time when you're going into actions like that, you've got to be over quite a wealthy individual or corporation to actually do it in the first place, because it's an expensive endeavor and the average person is not going to be able to afford to do that. So it's changed. It's morphed into, like you said, you've got basically an army of individuals talking about different topics that, you know, involve the yachting industry. Where do you see it going next?
Well, I'm bringing on 3 new podcasts in the next few months. So we're going to continue to branch out the same way that we have. And there is no limit to how many podcasts we can have. But my next step is that I am moving home to Canada, and I will be setting up a studio, and I'm going to bring back the radio portion that I got rid of, for the simple fact that I was just only one person. So my ultimate goal is to, once I move home to Canada, to have 24-hour DJs live. So we air the podcast. We also have DJs as well. And truly make a space for the yachting industry, whether you be on watch and you want to listen to music, or you want to, you know, place a call in and ask for music, or you want to, whatever, to have somebody, the way radio was supposed to be, to have somebody sort of on the other end and somebody to keep you company when you want somebody to keep you company and there's no one around.
That's quite cool. That is quite cool. I expect to be invited as guest though. First. I expect to be first. So that's exciting. You are on your way back. You know, what are you excited about going back? What spurred the move anyway? You know, it's a big, you've had a long your life on the island. It is beautiful, but obviously that's a big decision to go back.
Two of my children have already moved back. And my mother is elderly, and she's sort of at the stage now where I need to go back and help look after her. Well, look after her. Nobody's helping me. It'll be me looking after her. And my eldest daughter has given birth to 2 daughters. So I need to move back and, you know, be grandma, be the matriarch of the family, as it were, and take care of everybody and look after everybody. So that is the main goal. I have my son here. The reason I'm still here now is my son is finishing school in a couple of weeks. And so it will be us going home, really. And that's what spurred the idea of going back. I could stay here forever. I could. I don't like cold. I don't like winter. I think snow has a place, and it's on a mountain when I've got skis strapped to my feet. And that's the only place it has a place. But, you know, I think, I'm not sure about men necessarily, but I know definitely women, we tend to go where we need to go.
Yep. It is one of those things. I mean, obviously I've traveled a lot myself, and, you know, I've gone to some really cool places, but my home or the UK was never terrible enough to not go back. Because, you know, I always said if I was an orphan, I would have stayed probably in New Zealand. That was kind of like, if I was going to be selfish and just, it would be that there probably, or Canada, to be honest. You know, I had a fantastic time in Calgary and being that close to Banff and stuff like that. But it's family. And obviously, as you get older with your children and stuff like that, that becomes more and more important. And I know you keep saying that you're going to look after everybody, but they will get the opportunity to look after you. And I think that's also important. Because, you know, you have been on.
You haven't met my kids.
I'm sure they will.
It's my own fault. I raised them that way. So I gave them everything. Literally, I work. My existence is for my children now. So I'm getting that. Although I have to say, my son, he's turning into a right little gentleman. So I love my daughters, but they're very self-centered, which hopefully will change in 20 years. We'll see.
So says the woman that packed her bags, left Canada to go off traveling. I don't know where they got it from. I'm sure they didn't get it from you at all.
I wasn't self-centered. I just wanted to travel. I mean, I was really cool to travel.
Well, exciting times for you then on the horizon. Basically, just a lot of, well, graft, I'm so to some respect, but we will always, I'm excited for your next chapter, I have to say. Obviously, having spoken to you and known you for a long time, having a solid base and knowing that you're going to be there, you know, to set up a proper studio and have those new projects and opportunities, I think is going to be fantastic. And also,
well, and I'm excited too that my son, for example, he is going to be 17 in August, and he is now, we're training him over the summer to do the editing.
Wow. It's coming into the family biz.
Exactly. Nice. And my daughter, once her children are in school, you say 5 years from now, she is going to be taking over, you know, more the sales side of things. And my other daughter is extremely artistic, and I'm hoping that she will take over the creative side of things. So, you know, it's a family business, and I hope that even after I get hit by a bus, that they will take it over and carry on, you know, sort of what I envision this to be ultimately.
I'm sure they will. I don't think you're not going to get hit by a bus. You're going to be around for a very, very long time. You don't get to check out early. You've got work to do. It's true. Like, you just be one of those characters. Unfortunately, you're too important. It's been lovely talking to you and hearing your story. Having known you for quite some time, you know, I've learned something new about you today. That I didn't know. And like I said, I'm genuinely super excited about the next stage in your journey. And we've got a few projects that we're working on together that will be coming over in the coming to fruition. So you will always obviously have a voice in the Mediterranean, and I should always be flying your flag as well, even though you're not here.
Have to say, though, you know, It sounds like YR is a one-woman operation, and if that had been the case, we wouldn't have made it past the first year. And I have to say, I am incredibly grateful for so many of the hosts that came on board when we were just a fledgling little company that was sort of trying to beat up with the big guys. And they believed in my mission, and they believed in my vision. And it's people like you and people like Corinne and Marion and, you know, the Yachting USA, Yachting Canada, Bro Talk, all of these amazing hosts, self-care, that really created what Yachting International Radio is today. Because, you know, and I think that's something that people don't realize about YR is that we operate as a co-op. It's like a profit share, essentially. You know, when you sponsor a podcast, everybody gets a share of that money. And I think that's so exciting, because in a world where we're so busy trying to fight each other to get our little, you know, portion of the pie, we've all come together to say, you know what, let's become successful together. And that's special, and it's very, very unique, especially in this industry. So I need to say thank you to you and to every single other one of the hosts out there as well for seeing what I saw and seeing what could be possible.
No, it had to start with someone, and it kind of really started with you. So, you know, I probably wouldn't be sat here doing this if it wasn't for you either. So, you know, like you said, it's all, you know, we're a big YR family. Dysfunctional, a bit weird, but we work.
Really dysfunctional and really, really weird. That's a given. That's a toy. I mean, when your foundation is built on someone as strange as I am, it's bound to be weird. But you know what? I think that's what makes it fun. That's what makes it exciting. And I think that's what makes it different. You know, we're not a cookie cutter because I'm weird. It's good.
Well, and also, like we said in the beginning, the cookie cutter stuff had been given a lot of time. Like, that's all it was, you know. And there are still people out there at this moment in time that are just trying to do the glossy, just trying to, you know, just... Well, they don't talk about anything at all, you know, which, you know, is fine. I suppose marketing has its place to some degree. But I like to talk about something that mean something or could work or could change something. You know, time is precious from my perspective. But, you know, I do like a nice yacht interior. And, you know, it's quite nice to see some nice flowers and somebody drinking some orange.
You know what I would like? I would really like to see a drunken podcast in the audience.
Well, I would be super keen to do that. But, you know, I don't know where we are.
Wouldn't that be amazing, though? Like, I mean, you know, you invite people to the drunken podcast and you just get people drunk and you interview people. I think that would be the most hilarious thing. The drunken podcast.
I think I would call it the French water podcast. So my favorite French water, that pink stuff, it just makes it all come out.
I mean, the things that can you imagine the next day? And you'd have to make everybody's like, the scene would probably be a nightmare. Right? I can guarantee you would have a ton of people show up because it's free booze.
But yeah. Thank you for coming on and being a guest. It's a bit weird because obviously I've been on yours, but you've never been on mine. So it's quite nice to delve into the real and what makes you tick. And I honestly, from the bottom of my heart, I wish you all the best with your move. I've moved a lot in my time. It's stressful, but you're going to where it's meant to be. So, you know, it's going to be great. It's going to be great.
It will be. It will, if I can find a home. I might be coming to you live from the local Timmy's in Penticton, BC, or and sleeping on the local park bench. But it'll be live. It'll be still there.
Wow. I have, you know, obviously, you know, I follow the news. I know it's quite intense out there for accommodation. But it's the problem when you invite so many people in and there's nowhere for them to stay. You know, we've got an issue with that ourselves. Come on over. We've got nowhere for you to stay, but you know, whatevs. That's a story for another day. Thank you so much for being on, Ria, and bringing your story to our listeners. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. Have a great day.
If you've enjoyed this episode of Super Yacht Laundry, I suggest you go and find the other million episodes that we've got. We've got quite a few, a big collection nowadays. So there will be others that you will enjoy. We will be releasing more. So till the next time, see you later.